Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You also were on the Dunked On podcast with Nate Duncan.
I was. He's asked me to do that the last several years in a row. I am always happy to do it. This is the most nerdish of the well-known national NBA podcasts. And every year he gets a local writer from every city to do an hour-plus long preview of every NBA team. So I did it with him this week, which went up last night. And we're actually going to simulcast it. And so if you're not a Dunked On subscriber, but you're just a Daily Miffy and Grizzlies podcast subscriber, that same conversation is going to be on our podcast later today.
Okay. He, remind me, within the last year, he savaged something about Memphis. Was it the coach? What was he?
I mean, take your pick. He didn't like Bickerstaff ever as a coach. But then he also, I think savage is too strong of a word, but he said, and he actually said it again on the podcast, that he's heard that people don't like Zach Kleiman around the league.
I see.
I don't think that's savaging.
Right,
that's
no, that wasn't it. Yeah, maybe it was the Bickerstaff thing or whatever. But yeah, I just remember him. But yes, he said on the podcast that they don't like Zach. Who cares?
Yeah, well, that was sort of my point. It's like, you know, you get the job, you judge people by the job they do, and like they did a good job this summer, and so there you go.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if you get the sense that does being liked help you do your job as a GM?
If you're winning trades, that probably doesn't make you popular with the other GMs. Right.
So, all right, any further thoughts? LeBron didn't distinguish himself last night with his comments. Further thoughts on that? I know you've been sort of...
I just think it's complicated. I think there's a lot of... I was busy working. I haven't had a chance to fully absorb what LeBron said. To the degree that what I saw just on my Twitter feed is him saying Daryl Morey was misinformed, and I'm not a fan. I think I saw something about him walking that back, but I'm not a fan of that characterization. Who are you to say that Daryl Morey was misinformed? Daryl Morey just expressed an opinion about, you know... I suspect LeBron James is probably less informed, even though he does business with China on these issues, than Daryl Morey. My general thing is just I just think there's disingenuous going both ways a lot. I think there's a lot of reluctance to deal with it and know about it too much because it interferes with your money. But I also think, on the other hand, I think there's a lot of people sort of wanting athletes and people to wade into it when they themselves, they won't admit how much they don't know about it.
Right.
And I just think a little humility from all sides.
Yes. Yeah. The problem is that's not what LeBron said. LeBron said a lot of us, there's financial considerations and spiritual considerations, whatever that means. And he was misinformed. He didn't come at it with a sense of the Steve Kerr humility, sort of.
Right.
I talk about gun issues because they matter to me and I understand them. And that would have, had LeBron said that.
What Steph Curry said was something to the effect of, I don't know enough about Chinese history and Chinese politics. This is an important issue. I need to learn more. It is something we'll have to come back to.
Right.
To me, that's a totally... Right. And I will say on the Nate Duncan thing you mentioned, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet because it went up late last night. I'm the back half of the pod. On the front half of the pod, he interviews some kind of China scholar on these issues. And from what I see in my feed, apparently it's a really good interview. So that may be something to add context for people.
Okay. I know you watched Bluff City Law last night. Comment on the Grizzlies game?
Yeah, I watched it was on TV, so I stayed at home so I could do Bluff City Law. I watched the first three quarters, then I had to shift over to Bluff City Law. I have not gone back to the fourth quarter. I'm not sure how much more I'm going to learn from the fourth quarter, but I saw the first three quarters.
All right, so there were a lot of interesting things last night. One is Brandon Clark was really good.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, you got to be careful on, like, production in any individual game. We can't make every game in a referendum on everything.
Right.
What we saw with Brandon Clark is that he gets off the floor. I think we already knew this, but we saw it more in this game than any other time we've seen it. He gets off the floor a half second quicker than the other guy, and he stays in the air a half second longer than the other guy. And that quickness and that sort of almost floating quality he has in the air, it's going to mean he gets to rebounds before the other guy gets to the rebound. He gets the shot off as the other guy is starting his descent. Brandon Clark's still on his ascent, and he gets the shot off over the fingers, even though he's 6'8". And so we saw he has a special athletic quality in terms of that quickness and that springiness, and it's going to manifest itself in production, especially on rebounding, but in other ways too. And that was the clearest glimpse of that we've gotten, certainly.
You said you expected, well, the Taylor Jenkins had said there would be lineup changes, and there were changes to the starting lineup. One was that Dylan Brooks not only didn't start, Grayson Allen did, but he was the third coming in at the two. Right. What do you make of any of that?
I don't know what Taylor Jenkins will do come opening night. I don't think it's important to figure out who the best two guard is and give them a job and say that's my starting two guard this season. I think this season they need to be playing everybody, figuring out not only who's better, but who can be better next year and the year after.
Right.
And so Grace Allen needs to play, and Dylan Brooks needs to play, and D'Anthony Melton, who I'm still very interested in, when he gets in the mix, needs to play, and Marco Gudurich needs to play. It's not important to me to have someone, quote-unquote, win the job, and they're your two guard 30 minutes a night. I think it does not matter at all. I think all these guys need to be playing, and they need to be figuring out who's a keeper and who's not a keeper, and you can't do that with guys sitting on the bench. And so they need to be playing them all.
There are certain decisions to be made about them at the end of. I mean, Dylan Brooks, is this a contract year for him? Grayson Allen, you've got to decide whether you're going to pick up his option, which they
I assume they will. Yeah.
In a sense, figuring out what Dylan Brooks is almost the. Well, I guess they're all important.
Anthony Melton, they have decisions to make, contract wise.
What did you think of each of their? With the caveat that, of course, it's not a referendum. What did we think of them?
Well, Dylan Brooks, what Taylor Jenkins said, you know, with Dylan Brooks, the key is modulating his aggressiveness, right? He has the ability to do more than just be a spot-up shooter. He can attack a closeout. He can pull up. He can hit from mid-range. He's good at getting to the lane and taking contact, drawing fouls. He can do more than just stand around and shoot. But sometimes he tries to do too much. And so it's a matter of I think sometimes he has an outside sense of what his game is, or maybe there's too much of a desperation to prove yourself because of what you did last season. And it's for him, it's about playing in the proper flow. And if he can play in the proper flow, he's going to be a really useful offensive player for this team because he is he shot 3 of 5 last night. Again, it gets back to a lot of times, do you make your shots or miss your shots, right? I think he has proven he's a viable NBA three-point shooter in a way that no one else. Like Grayson Allen might be a better three-point shooter than Dylan Brooks, but Dylan Brooks has proven more.
Right.
So I think Dylan Brooks has proven he's a real three-point shooter, and he can do a little bit more with the ball than just stand there and shoot. It's just a matter of not trying to do too much. And if he can modulate his game the right way, then I think he's going to be, you know, start or not start or whatever, he'll be a rotation player on this team and hopefully a rotation player just in his career going forward. I do think he has that level of ability. But he can't be like, look at me, I'm going to create all this offense because that's not going to go well for him.
I do think it's the fact that he sees this opportunity with a capital O sort of made him overly, I have to be Mike.
He's on a team where if John Morant and Tyus Jones aren't creating the shot, the shot may not get created. And so there is that, somebody's got to do something, right?
Yeah.
So there's that.
They did not. You point out that they're better if they make their shots. They did not particularly as a team make their shots last night, and you don't think they will as a team.
There's no
this year.
Given the talent, given the roster, there's no reason to think they're going to be a good 3-point shooting team percentage wise. If that changes, it's because guys get materially better, which might happen. Like you sort of hope that happens with Grayson Allen, with some other players, but it'll be because they create good shots. It'll be because of the system that they run. And the pace and the point guard passing, they create more open looks. We'll see. I mean, on that podcast I did with Nate, he has the Grizzlies projected 29th offensively this season. I've got them 27th, which is what they were last season. I think they're going to be a bottom five offense in the NBA. I just don't see, given the mix of talent and the youth of the most talented players, I have a hard time seeing them not being really bad offensively.
Grayson Allen didn't make shots last night. How did he look beyond that?
I don't know if I noticed him that much. I mean, he didn't. That can be good and bad, right? I mean, bad and good. I mean, he didn't. There weren't obviously. Oh, this guy. Look, it's not Miles Plumlee shooting this crazy fallaway hook, or it's not that he looked bad. He just didn't look like much, and which to me is not particularly surprising.
All right, we'll get to the main course. John Morant.
He was more aggressive. Creating his own offense going to the rim, and I think it was good to see. I mean, I think there's three big questions about him. There's defense, finishing, and shooting. I think finishing is the most promising of those three, and I think he showed some good stuff last night in terms of being aggressive. He got to the line 9 times. Talk about how he didn't get to the line. I think it was 9.
Yeah, 9.
Didn't get to the line the first 2 games. With his quickness and his springiness, like in his touch, he should be a guy who can score and draw fouls and get to the rim, and he showed that last night. Defensively, like, not very good. I think he's just not going to be very good this season. But the shooting is just going to be the big thing with him. I know he didn't make any jumpers. He took like maybe one or two that I noticed. He's got to be a better shooter. It doesn't have to happen next week. It doesn't have to happen next month. Like, right. This is not this. We're in no hurry. But it's something that over time is going to be the biggest limiting factor to his game in terms of, will he be a real star? He's going to be a highlight player. We know that. Will he be a true star in terms of his actual effectiveness and production and impacting winning and losing in the NBA? It's going to be about how much better can he be as a shooter. And that's going to be the determinant.
Now, those are three things you put as concerns. Obviously, we're taking all his pluses over here, and then we're looking at the concerns being finishing, defense, shooting. Finishing, you think he ultimately will be a – he should be a good finisher. Defensively, will he become a credible defender, do you believe?
Oh, I think he – there's no reason he shouldn't be at least a league average defender at point guard.
Right.
He's got – doesn't have great size, but 6'3", 6'6", wingspan, probably above average. Obviously, great quickness.
Right.
He has to get physically stronger. He's only 20 years old. Like, that'll happen. I mean, you know, look at Mike Conley as a rookie versus Mike Conley when he's 26 or whatever. And so all that's going to come. It's going to be a matter of focus and demeanor and putting the effort into it. And as long as the effort follows that physical development, he should be at least an average, decent defender. The real issue is that with his size, he's probably always going to be a one-position defender. And that will limit him in some way. It'll limit the Grizzlies in some way. It'll make it easier for teams to hunt him out and get him on a switch and take him on the block and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's always going to be there. But as long as he can be an average defender, like Trae Young, I think, will never be an average defender, right? So as long as he can be an average defender, then that's good enough for him to be a star if he's an elite offensive player.
Right. Okay, Jaren Jackson, I know every game is not a referendum. There were some trends, though. The fouls, obviously, when he fouls out in 20 minutes and – in addition, there were some defensive lapses that Taylor Jenkins called to his attention on some of the threes. Thoughts on Jaren, who was not his best night?
It's one game. He had a bad night. I mean, the foul thing.
Right. Is the foul thing a thing?
Well, we don't know. He will have a high foul rate this season.
Right.
The proof is not his foul rate problem disappears. It's that it gets better.
Right.
Right. What you want from him is when he hits year three, year four, it reaches a plateau of normalcy where you don't care about it anymore. It's not going to go from a problem to not a problem in 1 year from age 19 to age 20. That's not expectation. Expectation is it trends the right way.
Right.
And we're not going to find out whether it's trending the right way. Like, ask me again in 30 games, right? Like, bad, you know, no foul problems in two preseason games and foul problems in one preseason game. It's not like it's not a problem. It is a problem night to night.
Right.
That's not it. It has to be over a larger sample. You know, he had a bad game. He's going to have bad games. So is everyone else. It didn't really impact anything to me in terms of he did hit two out of five threes. I want to see the three-point shooting volume. I want to see that him taking five threes or more like every night.
Right.
But I do think, and we'll see what happens when Jonas Valanciunas gets into the mix, and we'll see what happens over time. Because one of the things Taylor Jenkins said last week was, they're nowhere close to installing all the stuff they're going to do offensively, and that they won't be there on opening night. That his focus, his heavy focus offensively, has been building habits of running and spacing, running to your spot, spacing the floor, running to your spot, spacing the floor. That over time they'll add in the pick and roll, they'll add in some post up, they'll add some of that versatility to it. And I think they need to. I don't say that because, you know, you got to maximize this season. I don't believe that. I just, as a basketball person, like, I don't believe in throwing away the post game. I don't believe in throwing away interior play when you have good big men. And I think when you have Jonas Valanciunas and Jaren Jackson and they're like 7 feet tall and they're skilled, you should like let
them
be 7 feet tall and skilled. And so I'm being patient with that. But I do think that can't go away from the offense. I think if that goes away completely, that will be to the detriment not only of Jaren Jackson Jr., but certainly of Jonas Valanciunas. So we'll see.
It was their first game against a real NBA team, although a modest NBA team.
It's a wake-up call. I mean, playing against an NBA team is different than an international team, even when it's a bad bad NBA team, especially when you yourself are also a bad NBA team, which is what they are. So it's a little bit of a wake-up call, I think, in that regard. Yeah.
And then we didn't get to it. We talked about this on our podcast last week, but I do finally, since you led with this, the song, you compare Jaren and Ja on the podcast to another duo from your, I don't know if it's your youth, college days? College days?
Yeah. Garnett and Marbury. I mean, I don't say that to say, like, it's the same, right?
Right.
I don't think Jaren Jackson will be as good as Kevin Garnett. Ja Morant might be as good as Stephon Marbury. Hopefully, ultimately, he's better in terms of longevity, but he's a little bit different skill set. But the bones of that, the bones are so similar in that Garnett came in first as a teenager at age 19. He came into the league as a defensive-oriented big man who could make shots. And then the point guard, the flashy highlight-level point guard, came in year two. So they both came together. The big man is the second-year player. The point guard is the rookie. Both still under the age 21. And that dynamic, that point guard-big man dynamic instilled with youth and excitement, was not only a thing in Minnesota, it was a thing for the whole NBA. It was this is the new age Stockton Malone. These guys got next. And it blew up after 2 years and 18 games. And so I think with Jackson and Morant, it's going to take a different quality, but the broad character of it is very similar and in an intriguing way, and we'll see like how it pans out over time. I think it will have more longevity, almost certainly. Does it have the level of success? Even Marbury and Garnett, that franchise had never been to the playoffs, got to the playoffs their first year together, and then won their first playoff game.
When Marbury was a rookie, they got to the playoffs?
Yes. They had a losing record. They went 40-42, got to the playoffs, got swept. And then year two, they had a winning record, like 46 wins, something like that. Had a winning record, and they still lost in the first round, but they won a couple games, right? So you saw that elevation, and then it just blew up.
And it blew up for personality reasons? Is that why it
blew up? Stephon Marbury was jealous of Garnett. Garnett had a bigger contract. Why is he the bigger star? This should be my team. I'm homesick. I want my, I want to be the star, all this kind of stuff. And Flip Saunders tried to talk him out of it and talk him down. And he just, I want out. And they traded him. So actually, Elliot Perry was involved in this trade, which I didn't realize. I hadn't looked at it. It was a three-way deal between the Wolves, the Nets, and the Milwaukee Bucks. Terrell Brandon ended up coming to Minnesota, who was a very good player, and they had success with him, but they didn't win a playoff series with him. And Elliot Perry ended up moving from, I think, Milwaukee to New Jersey as an ancillary part of that trade.
And Marbury went to New Jersey.
Went to the Nets.
Went to the Nets as part of that deal.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.